Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. It's Louisa Nicola. I'm a neurophysiologist and human performance coach. I'm the founder of NeuroAthletics, where our mission is to democratize brain health education so you can perform better, think faster, and live longer. Joining me today is mixed martial artist champion of the world, Angela Lee Pucci. Angela is a Canadian-born American former professional mixed martial artist. She competed in the atomweight and strawweight divisions of ONE Championship, where she was the inaugural ONE Atomweight World Champion. Undefeated at atomweight, she has successfully defended the belt five times before vacating the title when she retired from the sport in September 2023. She still holds the record for longest championship reign in ONE history at more than 7 years. Today, we cover Angela's story, the life and hardship of MMA fighting, professional athleticism, mental health, and much, much more. So let's get straight into it. I had so much fun meeting Angela. She's such a doll. If you guys listen to her, she is not just a world champion fighter. She's also so soft-spoken and so sweet, and she has an absolute heart of gold. You're going to benefit from this. I already benefited from it. And guys, if you do, please go through, send this to somebody who you think will get massive value from this. That brings me to my next thing. Thank you to everybody for all of your kind reviews. If you haven't posted one yet, please go through and do so for a shout out in the next episode. Make sure you tag your Instagram handle in the Apple iTunes review section. Let's go. This episode is brought to you by Quarter Sleep. Something weird happened to me. My REM sleep is now higher than my deep sleep. Well, it was, you know, and so I was struggling because usually I like to see a deep sleep score much higher than my REM sleep score. I didn't know what was going on. I was checking everything. I was taking my sleep supplements. You all know that I supplement with magnesium L-threonate. It still wasn't working. Then I got my hands on this little vial of magic, and it's Quarter Sleep's PM formula. I'll tell you what it has in it. It's 100% natural, but it's given by most practicing physicians to their patients who have trouble sleeping. And I heard about this. I got onto the company. I'm like, you guys are amazing. They are now sponsoring the podcast because I believe in it so much, and it's helped me. When you look at the stats, I went from a 17% deep sleep all the way up to a 26%, and that was just in the matter of days. So this stuff works. It's amazing. So this is actually going to help you in this process if you aren't getting into deep sleep. So if this is something that you want to check out, because guys, sleep is the most underrated high performance tool that we have. You don't want to let it go to waste. I'm going to put the link below. Go through, check out Quarter Sleep, get a 1 month pack, try it out for yourself, and let me know what the changes are in your deep sleep. Welcome to the Neuro Experience and welcome to New York.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Cold?
Very.
Yeah.
Very for a Hawaii girl.
Yeah. Or were you born and raised in Hawaii?
Wasn't born. I was actually born in Vancouver, Canada. But I moved to Hawaii when I was 7. So I've been there since.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am so excited to understand your entire story because from what I have learned, you just mentioned your parents were MMA fighters. You, your sister, and your brother, you're all fighters.
Yes. So both of my parents, they were martial arts instructors. Mm-hmm. And then me, I'm the oldest. And I have a younger brother, Christian, my sister, Victoria. And then we actually have the youngest, Adrian, who's finishing up his last year of high school.
And he's also?
And he also trains, yes, and wants to fight.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, walk me through everything. Walk me through how you first got started and what it looked like back then.
For sure. So I first got started in martial arts through my parents, who had multiple gyms or schools in Canada. And so I would follow them to work, you know, as a baby, just cruising on the mats and, you know, 2-3 years old, taking the, you know, tiny tots classes. And yeah, I just was in that gym environment, and training was part of, you know, the daily routine. And then when competitions or tournaments kind of arose, I always got really excited because I was a really competitive kid. And I feel like that's where I really began to shine, is through that competitive outlet. When I moved to Hawaii, I still continued training. All of my siblings and I, we would regularly train. My parents were very adamant that all of us learn how to defend ourselves. So we had to keep up the training as a part of that. And we were never forced to compete, but that was always the part I looked forward to the most. So, you know, in order to compete, I had to train. So it was like a trade-off. And then, yeah, you know, throughout high school, I got a chance to travel nationally and internationally to compete. And that's where my eyes really opened up to all of the possibilities of what my future could look like. And what I loved to do was to travel and to compete. And so I was like, I think I found my calling or what I want to do. And after high school, I graduated. I actually went to college for 2 semesters. And during that time, I was training for my amateur fights in Hawaii. And after 2 semesters, I talked to my parents and I said, I don't think I can continue with school. It's just not where my heart is. And it's not what I want to do. I want to do this, which is competing, you know, professionally and being a fighter. And they supported me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your dad, obviously, because he became your coach, right?
Yes. Yeah. My dad's been my coach throughout my entire career. And even before then, just, you know, my first instructor. And yeah, they said, you know, you can do whatever you want. You just have to make sure you commit to it 100%.
Yeah. I can imagine how hard that must have been to have both a father and a coach as the same person.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there are benefits to it. You know, it's a great feeling to be able to work so closely with someone who really understands you. And at the same time, it is difficult because, you know, it's very much emotional, you know, through a training camp and through the fights. And yeah, it gets tricky.
Yeah. A lot of family politics would come into play. Training camps. I want to know about that because I come from a triathlete background. And when I used to do training camps, you know, I was in Australia. That's where I was training. Obviously, I was born and raised there. And our training camps consisted of doing, you know, we would go to Colorado Springs and do altitude training. And by the time we came back down to sea level, back to Sydney, Australia, I was so much faster and stronger, and all we would do would, you know, we'd all live together for like 3 weeks, and that was our type of training camp. Was yours similar?
Yes, it was similar. So before I became world champion, the fights before that, they were typically on shorter notice, and so I'd have a training camp of about 4 to 6 weeks. The first year I started fighting professionally, I actually fought 5 times in a year. And that was...
That's a lot?
That was a lot. Yeah. That's a lot back to back. And but after I became world champion, those training camps kind of dragged out to 8 to 12 weeks. And the reason being was I needed that extra time to descend my weight properly through, you know, dieting, and needed that extra time to essentially help me to get to my weight category.
Mm. Yeah, it's I've done work with some pro fighters before, and during the cut phase, like when they're trying to make weight, I feel like so many people are doing things that are right and also wrong. I've seen, you know, so many guys just sweating their way through to the through to the cut. Is that normal?
So for me, when I joined ONE Championship, early on in 2015, they made a change in the rule set where you were not able to dehydrate yourself to cut weight. So in turn, everyone was supposed to bump up a weight category so they wouldn't have to cut as much weight. Some people would bump up one category or two categories. And so you were supposed to have a more natural descent through, you know, just dieting, and they wanted you to fight closer to your weight. For me, when I started fighting in 2015, I fought at 115 pounds. When they made the weight change, I did not move up in weight. I stayed at 115 pounds. So that, it was a challenge for me and got more difficult as the years went on.
Yeah, it must be. Is this sport gender neutral? Is it 50-50 men and women, or is there more men?
I'd say that nowadays it's pretty equal. Yeah. There's still a lot more weight categories for the men. For the women, I believe there's 105, 115, 125, 135, 145. I don't think there's anything above that.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a very rare occasion. But yeah, for the most part, we've made a lot of improvement in terms of gender equality with the presence of, you know, women in MMA.
Yeah. And I can imagine from your standpoint, you know, from the outside, we look at fighters or certain sports and we think, wow, they've got great technical skills, or they've got great stamina, or they're strong, or they're fit. But what people often don't realize is what actually happens behind the curtains to be a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, the struggles of meeting weight. You've got the struggles of traveling, of trying to have friendships, relationships. Then you've got the whole mental health aspect, which I know that's something that you're really focusing on right now. And I want to kind of like take a journey. So right now I feel like we're at 2015. And when did you win your first title?
2016.
Okay, so 2016, you won your first title. How did that, what was going on during that year?
So that was, you know, a huge year for me, because all my life I had this dream or this goal to work towards, to become a world champion. And, you know, I was able to achieve that at 19 years old. You know, it was a big test for me, because prior to that fight, every single fight, I was just enjoying myself, you know, living the dream and doing what I loved. But there was so much at stake, and I really thought, you know, I was meant to do this. I was meant for this moment. But then also there were thoughts in my head, you know, countering that, saying, what if you can't do it? You know, what if it doesn't, what if you fail, you know? And I was like really, really nervous. So that fight, when I walked down the ramp to the cage, I was like, had a blank look on my face, terrified. I was just battling with my own thoughts. And so yeah, it was really stressful even before the fight. And the fight itself was five minute rounds. It went the distance. And every single second of that fight, I remember just trying my hardest to work for a finish, work towards, you know, the victory. And in the end, getting my hand raised was really, it was so emotional, because I felt, you know, the biggest battle wasn't, the fight itself was overcoming all of that self-doubt, and then the years of, you know, hard work, of dedication to, you know, my craft. And yeah, it was a really proud moment for me.
Yeah. And so, okay, so that was 2016. And then when was your next fight after that?
Oh my goodness, it's so much a blur. I believe I had title defense in January of 2017.
Okay.
And then I had another title defense. I had two, and then I was preparing for my third at the end of 2017 when it all kind of spiraled down for me. Yeah.
And we're going to get into 2017, because I know that was the hallmark year for you, and you can explain why. But I want to touch on this inner talk that most people go through. And it's funny. I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, and they were speaking about how, whether it's in my studies or in humans, where they've actually done controlled studies to show that what you actually expose yourself to, if you're watching a, I think they got their subjects to watch a very stressful event, and basically they measured how they felt afterwards, and their stress levels were completely raised and their cortisol levels were spiking, and they really thought they were in this event. And because of that, just from watching these stressful events, they then became stressed and cynical moving forward. And then, as opposed to somebody who watched something really funny and really light, then that's how they, you know, that dictated their mindset. So it got me thinking about like these inner thoughts and like believing them, and like whatever you think about. And you think a thought is just a thought. It's just a random made up word or something that you've seen or heard somewhere. And then you put it in your head. And if you're not able to stop it, if you're not able to pick up on it internally, it just keeps festering. And I think that's the mark of a really intelligent athlete, being able to, it's not saying, okay, I want to stop the thoughts because they're going to come in. It's more so being able to manage them. And there's a really great Stanford professor who said, she's got a really great book as well. Can't think of her name on the top of my head, but she says that the mark of emotional intelligence is someone who's able to recognize and react rationally to their emotions. And that's what it's all about in your sport as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree 100% on that. And, you know, I think a lot of the time that's what stops us from doing a lot of things, or that's our biggest fear, you know, is something that hasn't even happened. It's a possibility. And, you know, a lot of times we get so caught up in the what ifs, or, you know, what could happen, or what, but it's not real. It's not that present moment, you know? And I think sometimes we get really caught up in the future or the past, and takes away from that moment. But, you know, for me, battling with those thoughts and having those conversations with myself before the actual fight, you know, I feel like, and this was just me for my mentality, it was almost like a challenge for me. So I was challenging myself, and I was saying, well, can you do this? And then my other side of me was saying, yes, I can, you know, I'm going to do it, you know? And so I kept going back and forth, like, oh, doubting myself and then reaffirming. And then, you know, when you're exposed to these kinds of adversity and challenges, and then when you work your way through them, I just feel like you become not like two times or three times, like 10 times, you know, more, I guess, resilient, because you've gone through something that's strengthened you in a way. I mean, for me, like, not physically, but like mentally, going through that battle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had my fair share of inner battles, especially when I was an athlete, and I've now learned to recognize them. And by all means, you know, if I'm tired or hungry, those thoughts are really, I can easily go into a well. So it's like, how can I safeguard myself physiologically so I don't get into this trap of going down this mindless well that's going to lead to just a pit of despair? I think a lot of people, high functioning, have the ability to get there. Okay, so that was 2016. Now, I want to talk about 2017, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Why don't you give the audience a bit of a breakdown how that year went?
So the beginning of the year, I was coming off of a high of a great year, winning the world title, and then I got the opportunity to defend my title. I did
that.
What
does defend your title mean?
So once you become the champion, so you have the belt and you have the title, and so they're going to be challengers now coming to challenge you for that title. And so each fight from then on out, as a champion, you are defending the belt, defending your title as the current champion.
Okay.
And so in the beginning of the year, I won my first title defense. And then a few months later, won the second title defense. And so I'm doing really good. I met my husband at the end of 2016. And so we were dating throughout 2017. And, you know, I was having the most amazing year, you know, from fighting and defending my title to dating the most incredible person. And I was so happy. You know, I got to travel a lot. Mm. I ate a lot of good food. And that took a toll on me as an athlete because at the end of the year, you know, I was starting out this camp the heaviest I've been. And I had to get down to 115 pounds. And I believe I started the camp at 138. That was like really drastic, you know? And it's hard because as an athlete, when you have to make a weight requirement, you tend to fluctuate like crazy. And on off season, you just tend to let loose and not diet at all and just indulge in everything that you've been, you know, wanting, because when you're in fight camp or when you train for a fight, it's so strict and you restrict pretty much all of that. And so I was just speaking about this earlier, but the food cravings are so intense. Mm. And like the mind is just so strong. You know, I would literally be up late at night, not being able to sleep, watching food videos on my phone and taking notes of what I'm going to eat after my fight. It was intense.
Bodybuilders do that, I've realized. They, I've got a lot of friends who are in, you know, I've got, you know, a very nice fitness group of people here. And the bodybuilding girls, and probably guys too, do the craziest things. They do their planning. They've got the YouTube clips. They've got the Instagram posts of this is what I'm going to eat. I actually know some people who during their cut, this is in the bodybuilding world, they actually smell food, like for a, like to feel like they're actually eating. The and they mentally tell themselves, I'm eating the cookie or the pizza or whatever it is.
Yes, the cravings are so strong and so intense. And yeah, I've done that too.
Yeah.
Smell the cookie, eat your vegetables.
You know? Oh, wow, you've done it all.
And yeah, it sounds bizarre to anyone who hasn't experienced that yet. But yeah, I had so much ups and downs, and you know, my whole relationship with food and things is just, it's been turbulent to say the least, just because this whole issue of needing to make a weight requirement and how much sacrifice is needed to get there. Mm. I've always been a huge food lover, like major, major foodie. And so that was a really big challenge for me. And, you know, when I started the camp that heavy, I was a bit nervous, but I knew, I was like, I've always done it. I've always made it. I can do it. I've never missed weight for a competition ever. And so, you know, we started and, you know, I think my body, you know, I was pushing it really hard. I was overtraining. I was training like 3 times a day, you know, like the first training session starting at like 6 a.m. And then like, these are like intense sessions too.
What do they consist of?
For me, I never did individualized training. So, you know, some people do like strength and conditioning, kickboxing, boxing, then they do wrestling, then they do jiu-jitsu. So for me, all my training was always as a whole. So it would just be 3 MMA sessions throughout the day. Some days, you know, it'd be like a sparring day. Some days would be like a lighter day, just drilling. But it was always MMA as a whole. Yeah. And yeah, there was, the training schedule was intense, but it was normal. What made it even harder was the fact that I was under eating and essentially like starving myself, trying to make the weight, exercising too much, not eating enough. And my body was just pretty much, you know, fighting with me throughout this whole time and was like, no, I, my body was like telling me it couldn't handle anymore. Yeah.
So during, I think it was it the month of September, 2017, August, September?
November.
November.
Gosh, I need to I'm pretty sure it was November, yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me about what the mindset was, like spiraling. So I guess it really started off with you feeling as if, okay, I've gained X amount of weight, which, by the way, it can throw any female off her game. Just like weight gain is like this big elusive issue. I feel it as well. I was actually 40 pounds lighter. So 20 kilos. I was 20 kilos lighter when I was a triathlete. So that was actually really hard for me. I'm like, I look at myself and I'm like, that's not my body. So I can only imagine what you went through during the actual training season. So how did things start to spiral out of control mentally and emotionally for you?
Yeah. So as that camp was coming to an end, and it was about like less than 3 weeks until we had to leave for the fight, I still had 12 pounds to lose.
Mm.
And the weight was just not coming off. It was just not budging.
Mm.
And I was trying. And so then, you know, one night, you know, I do like a hot bath, I'm wrapped in towels, and I just feel like my mentality is spiraling. And I am beginning to feel myself break down, you know, physically and mentally. And it was just really, really tough because, you know, I felt very alone. I felt that I wasn't valued as a human being, and that my health wasn't a priority. And as an athlete, and I think all athletes, you know, they're never going to quit. So they're going to push themselves past their limits if you let them.
Mm.
So there needs to be people in place, you know, to protect them from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're never going to be like throwing in the towel, like, you know. And for me, that was the case. And it was hard because part of me knew, like, this isn't good. I don't think that I'm in a good place. And then the other part of me, who's that tough fighter, was like, you're going to push through this. You have to. And so that night was, you know, a very long night for me. Didn't get any sleep, hungry, thinking about how am I going to get this weight off. And at some point in the night, I just, you know, was honest with myself. And I told myself, I don't think I can make it, you know. So what are we going to do about that? Because for me at that time, like everything was riding on making the weight for this competition to get to the fight, to defend my title. And if I didn't, the first big fight was making weight. If you miss weight, you know, you pretty much lose the title, you lose everything. And so, you know, I wasn't going to allow myself to get to that point. And, you know, I was trying to find ways to get me out of the fight. And I was, you know, like harming myself. And then I don't want to go into like any details because I just don't want it to be like graphic. But, you know, when that wasn't working, I decided, you know, I am going to leave my life in fate's hands. And I really didn't care at that point what happened next because I was just so tired and exhausted and not having any space to let those thoughts or feelings and emotions out. You know, I just didn't think anyone could understand and that they would see me as, you know, weak or a quitter or a failure. And I didn't want to be seen that way. And so I got into my car and I intentionally was going to, you know, crash my car, and I didn't really care what happened next. And yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
But you survived?
Yeah.
Which is an amazing thing. Thank you for sharing that story. I think it's really, I think it's noble, and I think younger generations need to understand this. And it's like, elite sport is brutal. I think when you come from it from a sense of, I'm harming myself to make a weight category or to make weigh in, it's when you think about it logically now, do you look back and think, oh my gosh.
Definitely, you know, and I think that's like the wisdom that you gain through time and experience. At that moment, for me, making weight was the most important thing in my life. And that can be applied to so many different areas. You know, making the grade on that test is the most important thing. You know, getting that job or promotion. And we all get into this tunnel vision mentality sometimes, you know, and we need to take a step back and be like, that's really, it may seem like the most important thing in the world, it may seem like everything, but it's just one part of this whole life that you have to live. And you know, everything is temporary, you know, the good and the bad. Yeah, looking back now, it's, you know, I realize that, and that's why I'm so outspoken when it comes to fighter health, athlete health, mental health, just, you know, and it's hard, it's very difficult for the youth now because they have to try and navigate all of these complex, you know, thoughts and emotions with a lot less time. You know, they're just teenagers and they're going through all these changes and all these pressures. And, you know, I think that, you know, as adults or that older generation, we almost forget what it's like to be in their shoes, that they have so much to deal with. And what they need is compassion and empathy and a listening ear. Because a lot of times, I feel like what's told to them is, get over it, it's not big of a deal, you know, but to them, it's a huge deal. It's everything. And I think, you know, we all get that sometimes, but to take a step back and be able to see the bigger picture, it's very difficult. It's easier to say than do, you know.
I think now, you know, what I'm thankful for is that when I was a teenager, there was no social media. Mm-hmm. And I look at, so I've got three nieces and I see what is happening on social media, and all three of them are, you know, three nieces, three girls, and they're just like what they're putting up with. Like one of them went to, I think it was the middle one, she went to a party and, you know, the girls at the party, you know, put her in a bedroom and they started asking her questions, you know, really invasive questions. And one of them was filming the entire time. And then they put that on TikTok and then that went viral at the school. And my niece, when I, you know, went back to Australia, she's like, I don't want to go shopping. I don't want to go to the shopping center in case I see someone. It's like, oh my gosh, it is just the things that they have to deal with these days. It's way more than what I had to deal with. Thank goodness there was no social media, but I can only imagine how it would feel as a fighter. And now you're doing everything you really can to fight for mental health through Fight Story, which we'll get into. But I want to know what the comeback was for you, because you came back strong.
Thank you.
So what happened? Was there another fight after there?
Yes. So, you know, after the car crash, which no one knew about, that it was actually intentional.
Why is that?
I just felt really weak at that time. Like, I didn't feel that strength or courage to show who I really was or how I was really feeling. And that didn't come until later. You know, but I did tell my husband, because he was the only one who sat me down and really looked at me and said, what really happened? you know, what really went on? Like, you know, you fell asleep. Like, I don't know. Can you tell me? You know, and that's what really changed me to open up and take that risk to, because you know, it's scary. You don't want to like tell people how you're really feeling, you know, that fear of being judged. Or so when he asked me that, I felt like I could tell him the truth, and I did. And I felt, you know, I felt like I wasn't going through it alone, because, you know, he knew, and he didn't completely understand, you know, at all at that time, because we were engaged to be married, and he didn't see all the struggles I was going through, and he just thought like he had no clue. But through it all, even though he didn't completely understand, he was still there by my side. And just to have that one person to lean on for support in like my journey of healing was crucial. You know, I don't know how it would have been if I didn't share with him. But after that, I was able to, you know, slowly but surely kind of regain my strength and get back on my feet. And, you know, this whole time with the world not knowing about it, with my family not knowing about it, kind of picking up the pieces and putting myself back together. Yeah.
Mm. And when did you win your next fight?
My next fight was scheduled in 2018, mm-hmm. in May. And yeah, that was a tough fight. It was a tough fight. I didn't even realize it at the time how difficult it was to overcome all that I did, because I didn't really process it all. Yeah, mm. I was too busy like living in it. And yeah, it was a tough fight. I won. But I still, you know, I thought that that was just a moment and I was good, you know? But taking care of your mental health is something that's ongoing. It's something that needs to be taken care of daily.
Mm. Almost. Yeah, I think that too. But I think for your specific arena, you're also dealing with, you know, you've got the psychological aspect of it, which everyone does. But unfortunately, in your world, as with boxers as well and NFL players, you've also got concussions that take place. And we know that, you know, you and I were talking offline and I was just telling you how much I hate the Dana White's introduction of slap fighting. And the reason I hate that is because it's literally just self-inducing concussions. We know that concussions can lead to many different issues. We've got neurodegenerative issues, like, you know, leading to dementia. We've got issues such as, you know, from a post-concussive syndrome, if it's not dealt with, it can go down the depression pathway. And we even know that chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is repeated hits to the head over time, we know that that can cause somebody to, you know, depression and commit suicide. And it's just scary that your sport, not only you have to deal with just everything, you know, psychologically, but you've also got to deal with the physiological aspects of, if you do get hit in the head and you don't get treatment, then that can also aid in depressive-like symptoms and in that psychological trauma.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a high-risk sport.
Yeah.
And there's so many different factors involved. And I think that, you know, a lot of athletes, and I can speak for myself as well, don't even tend to think about that kind of repercussion in our sport. We think of training to win. And that's kind of all that's on our mind. You don't think of, okay, how are you after this fight and breaking down, you know, rest and recovery for your body physically, but also like mentally unwinding from that fight camp. Mm. It's pretty much non-existent.
Really?
Yeah.
So coaches are not teaching their athletes that?
From my experience and, you know, from the other fighters that I've met, and no. And, you know, it's the mentality is almost, okay, you know, take a few days to rest and recover and get back in the gym, and that's celebrated. And that's, you know, yeah, it's, there's more that needs to be done for sure.
Yeah. This is why we do at NeuroAthletics, this is why we have the coaching program. It's literally for coaches to understand more about neurology, like what is actually happening in the brain. Because I think that once they understand, oh, that's what the brain is. Oh, okay. Or sleep physiology. Like, I don't know about you, but when I was training, it was a badge of honor to not sleep. I was sleeping 6 hours a night, and I would, you know, I never missed a session. I remember one day I missed a session because I just was so physically exhausted. I couldn't get out of bed. And I was like traumatized by my team. They're like, we can't believe you slept in. It's like, I needed it, especially as a girl in her 20s. Mm-hmm. What other aspects do you think coaches are not really taking into consideration?
You know, one of the huge factors, you know, for fighters and combat sports athletes, it's making that weight requirement. They say that's the first fight before the actual fight. And I think that...
Oh, I love that. That's the first fight before the fight.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so many fighters, you know, can relate to that, that it is a struggle. It is a challenge. But I actually got a chance to see that whole process, not as a struggle. And this was after I gave birth to my daughter in 2021. Mm. And, you know, that pregnancy really changed me in so many different ways. But I kind of used Ava. I mean, she was inside me. She was the one dictating everything. But it was a reset for me, my body, after so many years of having that yo-yo dieting of, you know, binge eating, putting on all this weight, and then taking it all off, you know, in the fight camps. So I feel like my metabolism was shot. Everything was kind of just everywhere. And then I got pregnant. Mm. And I was actually training for a fight. So I was actually in a healthy place. I was walking around in my 20s, which was good for me. It was impressive. And throughout my pregnancy, I could not eat anything fried, any red meat. I was craving fruit and salads, and it was strange because this was complete opposite to what I was used to. So I ate really healthy and stayed active, and you know, that pregnancy was a really big blessing in so many ways. After my daughter was born, I knew I wanted to get back and fight. This was out of my own will because I wanted to show, you know, Ava that one day she can look back and see, you know, like everything, the whole picture. For me, I still loved fighting at that time. It was my passion. And so I wanted to get back, and I knew it was going to be a process. So I actually, this was the first time in my career when I reached out to my friend who's a nutritionist, and she was working with me before pregnancy and then after pregnancy as well. And that was the first time in my whole career where I didn't struggle to make weight. Mm-hmm. And I actually hit my weight, you know, far in advance before I had to fly out for my fight. And I could just focus on training and focusing on the technique and the game plan. And there was so much weight lifted off my shoulders. I was less stressed. And it was the first time I was almost feeling like there's something off about this. Like, why am I not more stressed out or, you know, anxious? And it was weird. It was almost too easy.
Yeah.
And then I was like eating, I was feeling good. And I was like, this something's not right. I'm supposed to be suffering. I'm supposed to be in like, and I felt great.
Mm.
I was happy. That fight, you know, it was a challenge. I got dropped with a body shot, And I came back and I won the fight. And
how many rounds was that?
Two rounds.
Rounds you won?
Two or three rounds. My memory is like fading. But yeah, it was in the second or third round, and I won via submission. And then with my baby girl in the cage with me after, you know, and that's one of my proudest achievements is, you know, going through that whole process. And I owe her all the credit because, you know, I was like, she was my inner nutrition slash like, you know, person helping me to kind of balance my body and everything. And yeah, so, but because I got to experience that, I can tell people now, like, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to be suffering. Mm. You know, there's a right way that you can be doing this. There are people who can help you. Mm. That's literally what they're trained to do. There's a science to it, how much weight you can lose in a healthy amount of time. And, you know, it starts all the way back. I mean, to high school wrestling and high school judo. I mean, no one is there to teach the kids how to properly lose the weight.
Yeah, I know that. It's even today, nutrition science is probably one of the biggest misnomers. Like on Instagram, it's just nutrition wars. People don't really know who to believe. And it's a very individualized thing. It takes into consideration everything from, you know, you could talk about genetics, but blood work as well, and like what you are deficient in, and, you know, how your body metabolizes certain nutrients. So it is a very individualized thing. And I think it's just comes down to who are you trusting with your prep.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that leads us to right now, which is fight story. And there's a reason why. I want to know what fight story is, and I want to know what the mission is of it and why you really are putting it out there.
Yeah, of course, I'd love to talk about that. Mm. Fight Story is a mental health nonprofit organization that I founded in honor of my sister, Victoria. And it was just this year that we've created it. You know, our mission is, you know, we want to be the change makers and kind of lead this initiative to talking about mental health in combat sports.
Mm.
Not just in combat sports, though. I mean, we want to advocate mental wellness for all. And the thing that connects us and unites us is our struggles. And so, you know, one of the things that we push in Fight Story is that we are all fighters in our own unique way. We all go through these daily battles, and you know, we're all fighters because each day we rise up and we choose to keep going. It's very much needed. I know there's so many people, you know, me personally, my family, so many friends that are all just affected by mental health in our own way. And this is an ongoing thing, and you know, we want to get out there that mental health isn't some unknown taboo subject. It's really just talking about health. Mental health and physical health are one and the same, and getting that message out to people.
Yeah. And how are you going to be doing that?
So for us, we're based in Hawaii right now. I'm excited to do a lot of work with the Hawaii community, but then also, you know, get these programs and the things we wish to do out to the global community and bringing it online so everyone has access to it. You know, we're going to be doing podcasts and videos, but also creating courses. Mm. And these are for individualized groups, but combat sports athletes, the youth, and the general public as well. And talking about, you know, the subjects of nutrition, recovery, and emotional well-being, which is something that can affect every single one of us and, you know, can greatly, you know, benefit us if we're doing things the right way to take care of ourselves, but also looking out for the warning signs and the things that could be detrimental to your body and to your health. So, you know, I'm really excited. We're going to be teaming up with experts and like yourself, like just having your insight and knowledge to add to these programs. Because, you know, the information is out there, but trying to find, you know, who to believe, who to trust. There's so much, it's almost an overload of information. Just bringing it together into one place where people can access it easily. The content is understandable and digestible. And yeah, so the course and then having a retreat as well,
where we can
dive more in depth on these subjects and make it an enjoyable experience and create that community.
Yeah. I mean, who better to do that than you? You've gone through the trenches and you know how to really change it. And would you say that that's going to be the course of your next career? Next, you know?
Yes, I'm really excited because I just see, you know, so much that we can do that can really be beneficial and life-changing for people. You know, the prevention aspect is really key, and something that I want to push hard is for Fight Story, we want to acknowledge our past experiences and our struggles that we've overcome, but also taking that step, preventative action, making sure that we can do everything possible to help ourselves and the next generation that's also up and coming. So
before we end, I want to ask, what are some of the, if you had to choose like three things to tell the next generation of female fighters in combat sport fighters, what would that be?
I would say, go for it, dream big, you can do it, and you can do anything you set your mind to. You know, there's no limit. But also, you know, once you get there, you know, the success is not in the achievement. The success is in the journey. And that's what I took a really long time to realize, because you put so much emphasis on this end goal or this belt or this title. But really, I feel the most success I've gained throughout it all is in the journey of the ups and the downs, of the wins and the losses. And every single part of that, you know, is a piece of this beautiful masterpiece that you can look back on one day. And so, you know, if you're going through a hard time right now, you know, keep writing your story. You know, it's everything comes and goes, and, you know, the good and the bad, you know, the good times, they never last. So they become a memory. And the tough times, the hard times, they're going to come and they're going to go. So just hold on, and, you know, we're in this together, every single one of us.
You're amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Where can everybody find out more about you and Fight Story?
You can visit us at fightstory.org. You can see our website and the things we have planned up and coming. And we're also on Instagram at Fight Story Official.
Thank you so much, Angela, for coming onto the Neuro Experience podcast.
Thank you for having me.